I painted my face.
You painted your face?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, you know, support the team.
Well, you can't walk around like that.
Why not?
Because it's insane.
Supporting face painters, including on Halloween, this is The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Let's get it on!
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey and is ready for Halloween. I am excited. I am ready to go. I want to say I played the song for Phil the Thrill, but we didn't do that. So, but congratulations to Phil Kessel, who broke the Iron Man streak and is going for 1,000 straight games.
That's for a guy where the joke was always his conditioning. And when Steve Simmons wrote that piece about him eating hot dogs before every game.
That was proven to be a lie.
Exactly. It's hilarious that it's him.
The funny part is...
because he's got amazing conditioning.
But I was going to say, the funny part is that... and again, there have been stories that have been put out over the last week. Just because, again, Phil's done such a great job in terms of, you know, not talking about himself. So other guys have started talking about him. There was I was watching the Jeff Merrick show the other day. And Merrick and Elliot Friedman were talking about him. Yep. And I'm just going to fade out Thriller here as we get out of here. They were talking about him about how great he is or whatever. How, you know, just, you know, this is an amazing sort of setup and good for him to get it and all that kind of stuff. And certainly I agree with that. That's incredible. But they were saying that there was a guy who came, Merrick said, like, you know, he's watching, he heard the story that guy came out of the room, he came out of the weight room just completely frazzled, just completely, like, beside himself. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Like, what's going on, you know? Guy goes, well, you know, listen, I've been working out all summer. I went the hardest I've ever gone all summer. I'm in the best shape I'm in, lowest amount of body fat I've ever been under. I literally can lift anything. And I just went in there and somebody said, hey, Phil, like, what are you doing? And Phil is known for being, like, huge on the leg press, right?
Yeah.
Huge. Like, this guy puts everybody to shame.
Yeah.
And he, you know, Phil's sitting there reading a magazine, sitting at the end of the bench, just reading a magazine, you know, going over some stuff or whatever. And somebody, hey, Phil, like, let's see what you can do. Like, you know, what'd you do all summer? And Phil goes, you want to see what I did all summer? And threw it down and literally, like, went out-repped everybody, out-weighted everybody, out, like, huge. And then just got off the leg press and went back to reading the magazine. And everybody's like, what the hell, man?
Yeah. He's one of those guys that's just a freak of nature. Like,
he loves the game. He loves playing. Like, he doesn't go hard in practice. And I mean, I'll give Phil, if you've played for as long as Phil has, I get it. You don't go hard in practice because you kind of know what you're supposed to do out there. But the fact that Phil shows up for every game and gives you 110% every game, people like Steve Simmons should be retired from the business of ever writing anything again.
He should have been retired a long time ago.
But I mean, you can't bring a guy down who legitimately loves the game as much as he did.
I think it's like an underrated thing that from the era that he was in Toronto when they were just abysmal was everyone gave him so much guff for his defensive play. He was the best defensive player for the Toronto Maple Leafs at that time, and he was really good.
But the thing is, and I mean, he took the same kind of flack in Pittsburgh for a few seasons until Pittsburgh won. And the reason that they stopped giving him flack about it is because in the playoffs, he would backcheck harder than anybody else on the ice because Phil wanted to win.
Yeah.
He just wants to win so bad.
Yeah.
And I go, you can't fault a guy for that. Again, when I was, again, not that I have any influence on Phil the Thrill, but it, when I was advocating that Phil go back to the Penguins when he was looking for a free agent, I wanted him and Malkin back together so badly. I wanted that so badly.
Those are two guys that like really push each other.
Well,
right?
and they're so aloof, and they're so, you know, like, who cares sort of thing. It looks like they're not even trying. Then they get out there, and they're legitimately like competing against each other. Yeah, no, it was fantastic. So congratulations to Phil on hitting 990. Obviously, he's going to go for 1,000. And, hey, hitting 400 goals as well. Question for you, then. Two Stanley Cups, no individual trophies. Hall of Fame worthy or not? My answer right now is absolutely, only because, again, he holds a record, a major record that'll never be, if it's broken, it's going to be broken by, I think Brent Burns is the next active player that's even close, and he's like 400 games behind him.
But all of his teammates in where is he now? In Vegas.
In Vegas.
The nearest guy behind him is William Karlsson, who will need to play like 15 games worth of hockey to get to the record that Phil just broke.
You think about that, 15 seasons worth of hockey just to get close without missing a game for any reason. And it's not like Phil avoids going to the high traffic here. He goes to the corners. He battles
in the corners. Like that's what makes it so, like that's what made the Keith Yandel setting it so incredible. Is that Keith Yandel was a physical, grindy defenseman. Like he did that aside, like along with putting up a lot of, but he wasn't like a defensive like wizard by any chance.
I mean, he had some offensive,
but he battled. I think if he hits 1,000, no question, walk right into the Hall of Fame. I think if he right now he might pass like. He's not a first ballot, but probably a second ballot.
Sure,
You need the other things around it.
I get that. Yeah.
But I think if he hits 1,000, no question, he goes into the Hall of Fame. Because like who's able to do that? Like it's a testament to him.
Nobody. That's the thing.
Exactly. It's you have guys that have longevity that get injured, get suspended. The fact that Phil was able to just do that is amazing.
Like. I can't even grasp the concept. 2009 is when this started.
Yeah. 2009. One lockout ago.
What is going on? Like 2009. I mean, he could have broken. I mean, it kind of sucks with the lockout and the shortened season and everything that was in. It kind of sucks that he missed that time, but at the same time, you're still, holy crap, like this guy's putting it all together. So good to see Phil the Thrill doing well. A little more fun, if you want to have a little more fun about Thriller. We were talking about this before. I'll fade it back in a little bit here. Thriller was actually released, and we were laughing about this, was released November 5th, 1983 in the UK. Like, could you not plan it out a week earlier?
I don't. Because I was under the assumption that it came out around Halloween, because I always see it around Halloween.
And it technically did.
With a holiday.
It technically did come out around Halloween, just after Halloween. Yeah.
Within the window, but the wrong side of it.
In the U.S., it came out January 23rd, 1984. Like, middle of January, nothing going on. Let's just release Thriller. We're good.
Yeah.
Vincent Price, as we know, does a spoken word on it. The song was produced by Quincy Jones, written by Rod Templeton. The video is directed by John Landis, which is awesome in terms of a horror movie guy kind of getting in there. Mm-hmm. The actual video, you would think, okay, well, now they can get it ready. Like this, they're planning it out. They got this big production. They're gonna get it right this time, right? Now, released on MTV, first premiered on MTV, December 2nd, 1983.
Like it's a testament to that, and what music videos represented back in the day, where they could get a guy like Vincent Price to come in to do spoken word for, not just a song.
So Quincy Jones actually contacted Landis to get him to do that. So it was like a, hey, we know a guy, but we got to get another guy to get a guy.
Yeah. But you have an acclaimed director of the time in Landis. You've got Vincent Price, who's a legend, coming in. To work on this music video.
And the studio would not finance the video either. They refused to finance the video unless they produced a documentary so that they could get the financing to produce the music video. So this music video almost didn't even happen.
Yeah.
And now it's the first music video that's been inducted in the National Film Registry. It went in 2009. Speaking of 2009, there you go.
Yeah.
A little tie-in.
Yeah, and it's incredible because music videos were so important back then. Way more, because you would never have something like that happen today.
No.
Music videos are an afterthought because nobody, aside from having it on YouTube when you're just listening to music.
Well, I mean, MTV was still huge back then, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was an art form. That and, like, advertising back then, a lot of it, like, a lot of great directors got their start in advertising, and a lot of them got their start in music videos because it was an easy, like, a stepping stone to get into the film industry.
Yeah.
And show off what you could do because there was so much value in it. They were watched so much. And now it's just like, you would never get something like that.
For those who may not know, this section right here, see if I can go back to it. So that howling that you heard was actually Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
One of the producers could not get his dog to howl the way they wanted it to. And he came in the next day and basically told Michael that, I can't get it to happen. Like, it just didn't happen yesterday. And Michael's like, I got it. Don't worry.
Yep. And he does that.
And he does it on the song.
Like, I was today years old when I found that out.
So Michael Jackson doing the howling on Thriller. And there's your quick update for a little Halloween fun there if you want to impress all your friends at your Halloween party. With that, though, speaking of Thriller and Halloween, we're going to get into some new costumes today because there's lots to go over in the costume world when it comes to the NHL. 32 new jerseys have come out thanks to the Reverse Retro, and we got to speak to one of the preeminent, or at least I got to speak to, you were busy yesterday, Jay, but I got to speak to one of the preeminent uniform people on the planet in Paul Lucas. You might recognize that name. Formerly of ESPN, writes UniWatch, has a Substack that's dedicated it all to the obsessive sort of examination of athletic aesthetics. Happy to have him join us for a little bit of talk. So there's about 30 minutes here of me talking to Paul all about stuff. We're going to listen to that, and then Jay and I are going to come back and discuss our own likes and dislikes and hates and awesome. How to improve stuff or whatever. So here's Paul Lucas talking with me a little bit about what happened with the new jersey release that came out last week for the NHL, the Reverse Retro 2.0. Enjoy this, and we'll be back after that. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we welcome the owner, writer, and visionary when it comes to the obsessive study of athletic aesthetics over on his website, UniWatch. He writes a Substack premium column where he dives deeper into specific uniform topics. He's a cat owner. He has a passion for the Mets, and there may not be any cut of meat that he isn't familiar with on this planet. Coming to us tonight, though, from the Big Apple where he lives, the Hockey Show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to welcome back Mr. Paul Lucas to the show. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, man. I don't know if I can live up to an introduction like that, but
thank you.
I think you covered most of the major bases about me and my life. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's always a good read, and certainly I enjoy some of the stuff, especially some of the side stuff you do as well, the barbecuing and the grilling and all that kind of cooking and stuff or whatever. That's always a good read. So thanks, I like that. How's everything going in New York City? Obviously, little bit of a busy city in terms of just how crazy it can be sometimes. But how are you?
I'm good. And autumn is my favorite season. I love fall, and we've got like a beautiful fall going on right now. It hasn't been too cold, but there's like just enough of a little nip in the air, and the trees are changing colors and all that stuff. So yeah. And you know, this is that rare time of year when all four of the major pro sports are happening.
Yeah.
Right. Cause baseball is still going on for another week or so in the World Series. And then you've got hockey and basketball have just started. And of course, we're in full swing of football. So, somebody who covers somebody who isn't sports specific in terms of sports writing like me, where I, you know, in theory, I cover everything. Right now, it's like a bonanza.
I mean, let's dig into that then, because I mean, obviously, there is a bonanza that happened last week when the NHL decided 32 teams are going to get a brand new look as the Reverse Retro program is back, thanks to Adidas and the NHL's partnership in that. Let's start first, just general thoughts on the concept of reverse retros, because it seems to be somewhat polarizing when you talk to traditional fans versus some of the sort of newer fans.
I think of myself mainly as a classicist. I resist the term traditionalist.
Okay.
Like traditional, personally, traditionalist says like don't ever change anything because change is bad.
Right.
And a classicist says, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if it, you know, but if you can improve it, you know, by all means, go ahead. Sure. Like that's sort of where I fall in terms of uniforms. I'm pretty much old school about most things. And I'm a longtime hockey fan. Like I grew up in the early 70s, like as a hockey fan. So I'm old now, right? and what I think about reverse retro is it a merch dump? Yeah. Like the point of reverse retro Like it's not a uniform program with a retail component.
Right.
It's really a merchandise program with an in-game component. And that is true, but it's also true of pretty much all uniforms nowadays. Like almost everything we see in terms of uniforms is merchandise first, on field or on court or on ice second. And so it's not unique in that regard. And what I think about when I compare it to the other big programs, like league-wide uniform programs we see in the other major sports, is like if you look at City Connect, which is Major League Baseball's thing, where the designs are based on like these, to my mind, these very strained, kind of cringe-inducing connections to local culture. NBA's City Edition, same thing, like the exact same thing. The NFL's Color Rush, right. No real design, like no storytelling aspect to it, just like let's do saturated color for the sake of doing saturated color. But if you look, you compare those to reverse retro is based on things that people like you and I usually geek out over. Yeah. Like it's based on old uniform designs and old logos and defunct teams and franchise previous identities. And like, those are things that I love thinking about. And so to me, it is essentially a uniform program about uniforms, or if you want to say it's a merchandise program about uniforms, not about like the architecture of some building in the center of town or the local skyline or like all these like ridiculous things that I find them ridiculous anyway, that the City Connect and City Edition things are about. It's about uniforms. And also, I know I'm rambling here, but bear with me.
That's okay.
Those other programs, if you talk to the teams and the leagues and to Nike, which is the company behind all those other programs I mentioned, they will tell you, they'll flat out tell you, this is designed to appeal to the non-fan or the casual fan. Like, they'll come up with those City Connect things with the idea that someone will just buy it as lifestyle merchandise, even if they're not, you know, a Chicago Cubs fan or whatever. They're not that into baseball, but right. They'll buy this jersey. But with reverse retro, honestly, if you look at like what the Sharks are doing with that California Seals design, or what the Canucks are doing with Johnny Canuck, like only a hockey fan would get that.
Right.
Like
yeah.
Only an NHL fan would understand that the Wild are making a Minnesota North Stars reference with their reverse retro design. So I feel like, is it ultimately a merch dump? Yeah. But compared to all the other merch dumps that we see in the other sports and the other leagues, I really like it. I find it much more interesting. It as a uniform guy, it's a program that I think is basically about uniforms.
Right.
And it has all these deep cut references that the casual fan is not even going to understand or would never occur to them, you know. But if you are like a serious fan and you know that the Golden Seals played, you know, in the same general area as the Sharks play now, like, oh, you can see the connection. And that's kind of cool. Like you can connect the dots. Some of it's like a history lesson, like the Devils using the colors from when they were the Scouts and the Rockies, which right. happened to be the yeah. same two color schemes. And I love all that. Like I think the concept of reverse retro, I really, really like. The execution is different. Like some teams execute it better than others, but the basic concept behind it, I really like a lot.
Well, and I know you laid out on your Substack column that went into great detail about the reverse retro. I know you laid out some sort of specific rules that you wanted to see for the reverse retros as well. Like, don't just sort of, you know, recolor an already existing design. Like, that's not really reverse retroing it. You're not having fun with it other than
well, you can bring it back. Recolor it a little. Like,
right.
My feeling yeah. is that there's a difference between a good uniform and a good reverse retro uniform.
Right.
Because of the concept behind it. Like it's supposed to be like a playful mixing and matching of eras and colors and design elements. And the example I cited that I think you're referring to in my Substack column was the Predators, who for this year's, you know, for the new reverse retro, they took their what's usually referred to as the mustard cat right. design, which I think is from like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And they basically just copy pasted it onto like a new Adidas temp, you know, the current Adidas jersey template, and changed the color from mustard to yellow.
Right.
Or, you know, some people would say gold, but like, come on, it's yellow. And that's not much of a change. Like, going from mustard, like basically a dull yellow to a bright yellow is not, like, to me, is not enough of a change to justify the reverse retro treatment. Like, if they had changed it to white or navy, or if they'd used like that number font with the guitar strings going through it had for a while, or if they changed the striping. But it is literally, except for like the collar tailoring, because again, they put it on the new Adidas template.
Right, yeah.
But in terms of the graphics, it is literally the exact same jersey, except it used to be in this dull yellow mustard color, and now it's in a brighter yellow. Like, come on, man. Like, that's just lazy.
Yes.
Like, you've got this possibility to really play around with this and have some fun. And I actually think that new Predators design, the brighter yellow, is nice.
Yes.
Like, it's not a bad uniform.
No, I agree with
that. But I don't think it's a good reverse retro uniform. And so when I was ranking them, and I did a worst to first ranking in that Substack piece, I docked them a bunch of points. Like, I put them in the middle of the pack, basically, because I don't feel like they really, like, made use of the concept of reverse retro. They just basically, like, if they put that out today as a throwback or as an alternate, as a third jersey or something like that wouldn't be bad.
Sure.
But for something that's basically going to be worn for only one season, because reverse retro is for only one season, and where you had the opportunity to do something really interesting, I think it's just a wasted opportunity. And like, by contrast, the Coyotes, they also basically copy pasted a design, like the Peyote Coyote design, but they did it with a completely different color palette. They didn't just like brighten up the shade, or like they used like this sort of deep woodland orange. I don't even know what they're calling it, Sedona orange or whatever.
Something like that,
some marketing color term. but it's the kind of thing, when you see that, it kind of messes with your head. Because it's familiar and also unfamiliar at the same time. And I think that's the fun of reverse retro, is that it's familiar in terms of like the graphics, and you know, like, this has reference points that speak to you, like visual reference points. But wait, what did they do to it? And that's like, to me, that can work really well. And that's what the Predators fail to do, because they like just basically using a different shade of yellow. That's not even really a different color.
So, I mean, one of the big things that you cover on UniWatch a lot is legitimately black for black's sake. Do you appreciate teams that just simply swapped their colors for a black color? For example, Washington did that with their reverse retro this year.
I'm not big on that design to begin with. The Capitals, the screaming eagle.
Yeah.
The Flames also did that, right?
Right.
Calgary, their reverse retro is now a black version of what's usually referred to as the pedestal design.
Right.
Right. And that works okay. And, you know, black is part of their color, or has been part of their color scheme, in a black for black's sake way.
And when
we say black for black's sake, we mean like teams basically who don't normally have black as a team color, but black sells at retail. So if suddenly they have a black alternate jersey, wow, I wonder why they did that. But the Flames have done that. They've had black uniforms, you know, at various points in their history. They had even the black logo, like the flaming sea crest, which I never really like. If something's on fire, it's not black. You know, black is the ashes when it's
exactly
done.
It's already out. Yeah.
but anyway, they have used black, but they had never had a black version of the pedestal design. So okay, now they're doing that. They're referencing their graphic history with the pedestal template, and they're also referencing their chromatic history, their color history, by rendering that dot design, that the pedestal design, in black. And it wasn't my like favorite, but I feel like, yeah, that's a legit reverse retro approach. And I had them, I think, also in the middle of the pack, but a few notches higher than the Predators.
Sure. Well, that's fair then. Let's talk about that ranking then. Cause I mean, let's start with the bottom where things are never that great, but I mean, we'll work our way to the top at that point. But what were the worst five in your opinion that were put out this year?
The worst one, I thought, in part because I felt like they were telling us that it was the worst, was the Hurricanes.
Okay.
Because they just did a red version of their current road jersey, of their current white road uniform.
Right.
And that's not even retro. Like that design has only existed since 2019.
Right.
And so, like, wow, they threw it all the way back. And, you know, this is a team that actually does have some history. They can play around with Hartford in terms of their franchise history, right? They can do, like, Whalers stuff if they wanted to, which I believe they did for the last reverse.
They wore the gray version of the Whalers jersey, correct, yeah.
Right. Or they could use Whalers colors on their current graphics, you know, and, like, they have a lot of possibilities. They just did this lazy kind of thing. And they actually tweeted, like, their social media team made fun of themselves. They put out a tweet the day of the unveiling saying, we're throwing it all the way back to 2019.
Right. Yeah.
And with a little like emoji sort of acknowledging that, like, it was kind of a lame move. And also you can tell, as the teams have started announcing their uniform schedules for reverse retro, the Hurricanes have announced they are wearing this uniform a grand total of two times, which is the minimum. They have to do it at least twice. And to me, what that says to me in terms of both the design, the tweet, and the scheduling is that they didn't really want to be part of this. They don't think they even tried very hard,
right?
And they just want it to go away. Like, they're going to do it twice because they have to, and it's going to go away. And so if they don't care about it, why should we? I've already talked about it too much, probably. But I feel like they're basically telling us that, like, yeah, that this wasn't a very strong effort. And I think most of the bad designs, with maybe one or two exceptions, most of the bad designs, it's not so much that they're bad, it's that there's no compelling reason for any of them to exist. Like, you look at the Maple Leafs,
yeah,
both last time and this time, the first reverse retro and the current reverse retro, and you look at them and it just, yeah, it looks like a Maple Leafs jersey. It looks like a blue Maple Leafs jersey.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, they've sort of tweaked the design of the leaf a few times over the years, but generally the Leafs haven't, you know, the Maple Leafs haven't changed their uniform much in like the better part of a century. And so they don't have a lot of variations to like kind of reference or throw back to, and or a lot of colors. And they're a two color team, right? Blue and white. They don't even have a third accent color like most teams do. And they don't really work for this program. And they have come up, or I mean, they could do the St. Pat's thing, right? If they want to.
Or the arenas, I guess, because they're a little darker blue, but
yeah, right, either right.
Yeah.
But generally, like for both of the iterations of reverse retro, the one from two seasons ago and the new one, it just looks like a Maple Leafs jersey. It doesn't look that different. It doesn't. I mean, you know, if you're seriously into uniforms or hockey, you're going to notice small differences, but not enough to matter. Like, there's no compelling reason for that uniform to me, for this new reverse retro Maple Leafs uniform to exist. And I believe they are also wearing it only twice.
Yes, I believe
the
so.
The other team with only 2 dates.
I jokingly said that the reason they picked 62, the 62 design, was because it was the first year they had that the team wore TV numbers on the sleeves. So maybe they were doing it for historical reasons, but I mean, obviously, if they're only wearing it two times, I'm sure they're not pushing the history on that. So
yeah. And so I feel like there's a bunch of them that just don't really, there's just no reason for it to exist. It's not like it's terrible. It's just like, it's not that different.
Right.
And of course it's a fine line. Like, you want to be different, but you don't want to be garish or stupid or, you know, whatever. And I guess in that category, I would put, the Panthers new reverse retro, which it's interesting because, on the crest, you know, for the big logo on the front of the sweater,
yeah.
Most teams are just using either their current crest in a recolored version or some previous crest that they had in an earlier time in their history. But the Panthers are using a shoulder patch, basically a design that had been a shoulder patch for them in the 90s, and they've blown it up, you know, giant size, and now it is the primary logo on the front of the jersey. And I have to say, I question how many hockey fans even know that that was, you know, would recognize that as a Panthers logo. Panthers fans will, I would imagine.
Sure, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it, the combination of it not really having that familiar sense, like, oh, of course, I know that's the Panthers, you know, because I don't think it does that. I don't think most fans are going to recognize that that design, that logo as a Florida Panthers logo.
No.
The combination of that and the coloration they've done, which, I mean, they certainly, you know, played around with the colors, but to my mind, not to an attractive effect. Combination of their usual red and yellow and then this powder blue, light blue. To me, those things don't combine or intermix very well.
Right.
So that was one where, unlike, you know, the Maple Leafs or some of the others where there's no real reason for that to exist because it's too similar to what they've done. The Panthers tried. They tried really hard. I think maybe they tried too hard to be different. And so that's the one to me that is not like a sort of non-design, but like just a really bad design.
That's fair. I'm okay with that. Chicago, Detroit. Did you appreciate? I mean, I know you appreciate striping, but I feel like they kind of missed the mark with both of these jerseys.
Yeah, I find it really surprising that for Chicago and Detroit, they essentially went with the same design for both of them.
Yeah.
Like they're both red jerseys with black stripes, with the city name spelled out in white across the chest, you know, just lettering, no logo, no graphic. White TV numbers or sleeve numbers on a black field on the sleeves. They're not exactly the same, but they're really similar. And it's very odd to me that they would do this in the same program, like that they could have done one of these 2 years ago for the original reverse retro and done the other one, the other team now. But to do both of them in the same season, I find kind of bizarre, frankly. The Chicago one, you know, we associate barber pole kind of designs with Chicago. Like they had over the years, they have had a lot of, I mean, usually earlier, you know, earlier in their history, but they've been revived as throwbacks and winter classics and things like that, stadium series. They have had these horizontally striped designs that are usually referred to as the barber pole designs. And so for me, that sort of works as a Chicago design, because it feels a little familiar. The Detroit design is based on their 75th anniversary uniform from the early 90s, which in turn was inspired by the 1927 uniform that they had. So these are two teams with like deep histories.
Yeah.
But I don't think most people would remember or think of or associate the Red Wings with those stripes.
No. Definitely not. Not with a black stripe anyway. White stripes, yes, but black stripes.
Yeah, well, that's the reverse part, right?
Right, like, yeah, I get the reverse. Yeah,
But it just doesn't, it's not familiar enough. Like when you see that, you don't think, oh yeah, that's a Red Wings design, but they messed with it. It just looks like a shirt that says Detroit across the front.
And see, that's what I look at when I see the Chicago one. I'm thinking, is that Chicago Blackhawks or is that Chicago Bulls? Like, what team are we representing here? Because there's no representation whatsoever for the Blackhawks on there. So I just kind of went, like, you guys are throwing it back to eras that, again, are pretty, you know, light in terms of people knowing about them. But at the same time, though, obscure, you're not really stamping it with your brand either. So, I don't know. That was the one. Vancouver, I know you mentioned, you said you like Johnny Canuck. Do you have a problem
with Johnny Canuck? I've been waiting years, man, for the Canucks to do something with a Johnny Canuck logo. And of course, I imagine most people know, but Johnny Canuck was the mascot character or logo character for the minor league Vancouver Canucks of the old WHL in the early 60s.
So do you have a problem with them dressing their NHL team like their AHL team then? Because the Abbotsford Canucks uses Johnny Canuck as their logo.
Oh, I didn't know that today.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that, but no, I have no problem. I think it's awesome. First of all, Johnny Canuck is just a great character. And it, you know, I think it looks fantastic. And let's face it, the NHL Vancouver Canucks have not really been a strong visual program team over the last few years. So anything to get the orca out of there, which I'm not, I've never been a fan of, and not having the team name across the chest or the city name across I am totally digging the Johnny Canuck design. I actually ranked that one as number four in this new series. Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the top five then. We already know one of them. Who are your other other teams in your top four then?
I had at the in the all right. So I'll count up. From number five for fifth, I had the Wild.
Okay.
Because they once again, as they did last time, they referenced the North Stars. So they used North Stars colors and used those colors on their current basic jersey. They used North Stars typography, the old North Stars number font. I love this design. Actually, they're doing the green one now. They did the white one when they had the first reverse retro two seasons ago.
Right.
But it is basically the same idea. Like, let's just put North Stars color. And so that's on strict aesthetic terms, I could have ranked it even higher, but I put them at number five because basically they just did the same thing with the, you know,
that's fair,
like a colored jersey instead of a white jersey.
Yeah,
but it does look great. I really, really like that one. And I miss the North Stars so much, or at least their uniforms. Then at number four, I had the Canucks, which we just discussed.
Yeah.
For number three, I had the Blues.
Right.
This is something where, like, again, it's such a deep cut. They took a prototype jersey design that the original GM and owner of the team were photographed wearing in 1966. That's a year before the Blues even started playing.
Right. Yes.
But when St. Louis was awarded a franchise in 66, their GM, Lynn Patrick, and their owner, Sid Salomon, posed wearing these prototype designs of jerseys that were supposed to be the Blues' inaugural jerseys. But when after a year went by and when the team actually debuted, they had decided not to use that design and went with the basic Blue Note design that essentially the team still uses today and that we're all familiar with. But the photo of them wearing these prototype jerseys has become sort of legendary among uniform fans kind of like what might have been. And the Blues themselves even wore these jerseys for a skills competition a few years ago, not in an actual game, but for a skills competition, sort of acknowledging their history. And I loved that. And it was, you know, you got everybody sort of talking about, like, what is this design? Oh, the original owner wore this, you know.
Yeah.
And so it kind of helped teach people a little more about this uniform that might have been. And so that's what the Blues have used for their reverse retro. The original ones that the original GM and owner wore were blue and white, but the Blues have now, because it's reverse retro, they've gone and used yellow or gold, if you prefer.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's very retro. It's very reverse because it's a color that wasn't used at the time. And it's like, it's a great history lesson. It's really, really fun. It takes like a chapter of the team's history that's, you know, buried and gone and brings it back to life. And also, I think it's just a good looking design.
Yeah.
You know, even without all that history, I just really like it.
And one of my top five for sure.
So that was my number three. Number two, I had the Coyotes, who, as I mentioned, basically took their old Peyote Coyote design and gave it a totally different color palette. And I just love these colors. Maybe it's because autumn is in the air, but like this autumnal color palette that they use, it's got this like deep orange, a deep burgundy, a hunter green and black. It really works for me. So I think that one is gorgeous. I can't wait to see it on the ice. And then my number one, I suspect was everyone's number one, if you care about uniforms, and that's the Sharks.
Yes.
Who basically took the old California Golden Seals design, teal and yellow, weird UCLA style stripes on the shoulders, which is something we don't often see in hockey. That's more of a football kind of thing. But that's what the Seals wore back in the day. And because the word shark starts with an S, just and you know, has some similar letters in it, you know, there's an A, there's the S, there's the S at the end. They use the old SEALs typography, which was very distinctive, very goofy looking, frankly. You'd never like put a team on the ice, you know, starting out with this today. But at the time, you know, it was the 70s. Things were like kind of funky and like things just happened like that. Design was a little more freewheeling. And so the Sharks have borrowed that. And I just love this one because, of course, the SEALs played in the Bay Area. The Sharks are in San Jose. So it's like fairly close. And it's a great way to reference NHL history and local hockey history. And to me, this one was brilliant. Like, I don't know who came up with this one instead of just doing another leaping shark, you know,
how
many different versions of that have the Sharks done. To me, this was like the cream of the crop.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that Sharks jersey is fantastic. I mean, I would have liked to see maybe Colorado go with that Quebec prototype and see if they could have rolled that in after doing the Nordiques and the previous reverse retro as well. But I mean, to each their own on that. The big thing, I guess, is that obviously the NHL has decided that they're going to move on from Adidas after this year. So reverse retros are basically collector's items at this point in terms of if you have one, great. If you don't, well, get your hands on one if you can. But we probably won't see that program anymore. What do you take on this? Knowing that the NHL has burned through Adidas, burned through Reebok, burned through CCM, is this just a way for them to maximize profits with a new jersey sort of partner, I guess, in terms of creating new ones? Or is this looking for better and bigger in terms of what they can do with their jerseys?
I don't think it's either, because it wasn't the NHL's decision. It was Adidas that decided not to renew.
Sure, yeah.
They chose not to renew their contract or extend their contract. And so it wasn't really the NHL like kicking Adidas to the curb or being unhappy with them or wanting something bigger and better. It was Adidas that decided we don't want to be in the NHL business anymore. I've talked to some NHL people, including I did an interview recently with Bob Hafiker, who's one of the assistant equipment guys with the Kings.
Okay.
And he said he really liked working with Adidas. He said that the uniforms were good. The players really liked them. The service was good. Like turnaround, when they needed something from Adidas, they could get it. He said he had no complaints. He said he was going to miss them, basically, that he was sorry that they weren't going to, you know, stick around. I think the question is who's going to step in and be the next outfitter. And, you know, the obvious possibility is Nike, which already runs the uniform programs for the other major pro North American leagues, the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball. If they got the NHL as well, they'd have like a clean sweep of all those leagues. But there are other possibilities out there. One of the more intriguing ones that I heard was that Fanatics could actually take over. And of course, we think of them more as a retail provider, but they do actually provide not in a branded way, but in terms of the operations and supply.
Yeah.
They provide the Major League Baseball jerseys and uniforms. And I'm not sure if they have a current involvement in the NHL, but they like they would be equipped to do this if they wanted to.
They are, I believe, the merchandise partner for the NHL. So, I mean, I could see that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're the merch partner. Yeah, for sure. But what I'm saying is that in Major League Baseball, they don't just do merch.
Right. No, yeah.
They actually supply, like, if you call up a guy from the minor leagues, you contact Fanatics.
Yeah.
And they get me this jersey lettered up and all that. So that's a possibility. That would be a big jump for them if they became like the official outfitter of record rather than just somebody doing fulfillment. So that's one possibility. And then obviously there are other other brands that specialize in hockey.
I mean, CCM is still doing all the junior leagues and the AHL, the, you know, all those leagues and stuff or whatever. So there's definitely options out there. But I mean, it's just tough to see, you know, sort of changing brands yet again after a few years and kind of shake your head.
Yeah, you know, it is a little unusual because most of the other leagues have had longer term deals. And, you know, the NHL did have a long term deal with Reebok. That lasted a pretty good while. But yeah, like Nike has been outfitting the NFL since 2012. So that's a decade now. They've just started with Major League Baseball in 2020, but before that, Majestic had been doing Major League Baseball for a long, long stretch. So that was a long-term relationship. Nike's been with the NBA since 2017. And I believe that deal is extended at least through 2025. So that's a long-term deal. Yep. Before that, the NBA had been with Adidas for a long stretch. So yeah, for Adidas to do the NHL for only 5 years is sort of, like, it sticks out a little as a surprising, surprisingly short-term thing. One thing to remember, though, and Bob Hafaker, again, the guy who works for the Kings, he reminded me of this. All of these jerseys, at least for the NHL, come out of the same factory in Canada.
Like, yes,
it's
yes.
just a question, like, because all these companies outsource to the same manufacturers, the same factories, and so it's just a question of to what specs and like what template, what chassis is. I know Nike likes to use that term, like
the
tailoring template. They call it a chassis, so it sounds more industrial or something. But it is literally going to be the same people sewing these jerseys together on the same equipment on this. So, you know, a lot of it is really just a change in branding.
A couple of quick hits before we let you go here, Paul. San Jose back in teal this year. Are you happy to see that?
You know, I'm sort of mixed feelings about, I don't like the solid teal.
Okay.
Because the home uniform, where it's teal jersey, teal pants, teal socks. Because to my mind, the whole point of hockey pants is to provide some contrast.
Right.
And so I do think the road uniform looks great with the white jersey and the teal pants. I think that looks fantastic. But I've never been a big fan of solid anything in hockey. Like even the Red Wings, right? Classic uniform, classic legacy team. But red jersey, red pants, red socks, it's too much. Give me a little contrast. That's what I like in a hockey uniform.
Break up the monochrome. I hear that. Vegas finally goes to gold to become the Golden Knights at home. Are you happy to see gold at home for Vegas?
I am, actually. I really like that uniform. I think it's like that sparkly shade of gold. It's something we've never seen before. And I loved it when they introduced it as an alternate. And I said at the time, you're the Golden Knights. Go gold, man. Like live up to your name. Like have the courage of your convictions and your identity. And now they have. And yeah, I think that's a really good move. And I'm a big fan of it.
Last question. We never got your thoughts on it when it happened. But Seattle's jerseys. What do you think of Seattle's entire sort of look and brand in terms of the way they're going about their business?
Overall, I'm fine with it. I think, you know, like from the name, but, you know, Kraken to the main logo, I'm generally a bigger fan of the road uniform.
Yeah,
that's true for me for a lot of, I tend to like hockey in white better than in color. Maybe because there's always that contrast. I just talk about it all the time. I much preferred when NHL teams wore white at home than color at home. But in general, I think the Kraken are fine. I was disappointed in their reverse retro design because they could have based it on the Seattle Metropolitans, which is one of the all-time great minor league uniforms. And it was just waiting to happen. It was a layup. It was a gimme. And instead, they based it on a different Seattle minor league team, or they supposedly did. But to me, like, it doesn't translate well. It just looks like another Kraken, like a basic Kraken jersey, like an alternate Kraken jersey. It doesn't, to me, have the feel of reverse retro, and it's such a missed opportunity not to have referenced the Metropolitans.
I'll give you a chance, Paul. I mean, obviously, promote what you need to promote here. I mean, you got a website, you got a Substack, you got, you know, 100 other things going on. Promote whatever you got to promote. I'll let you get a quick soapbox in here, and we'll leave it with that.
Sure. If people want to follow what I do, you can read the UniWatch blog at uni-watch.com. There's new content there every day, often several times a day. You can follow me on Twitter at UniWatch. No hyphen there. I know it's confusing. The website design is uni-watch.com. The Twitter handle is just at UniWatch, UniWatch. And you can subscribe to my premium content on Substack at Paul Lucas, that's PaulLukas, paullucas.substack.com.
Paul, we are always thrilled when you get a chance to talk to you. You are, again, the preeminent uniform guy in terms of everybody coming to you. I know you get mentioned a lot on Mets broadcasts and stuff, so the guys there obviously are watching as well, but we are always thrilled to have you on here. Thanks for doing this tonight and giving us a little bit of your time.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you, buddy.
So there's Paul Lucas. Fantastic chat with him, and got a lot of good ideas and a lot of good information from Paul about all the uniforms that are going on. I want to thank him again for coming on, giving us a little bit of time. Jason, we got a... I'm going to squeeze this in. We got 11 minutes to go here before we're out of time. So let's get this in. Paul's top five included from 5 to 1, Minnesota, Vancouver, St. Louis, Arizona, San Jose, he thought was the best. Mm-hmm. Your top five.
Top five, 5 to 1. Number five, Washington. I absolutely love the Screaming Eagle jersey.
In black, though?
In black.
Oh.
I like it. It's a little bit of a twist. I know black is overdone, but still. Number four, Tampa. I will die on the hill that we need to bring back jersey sublimation in some way. It is such a wonky, weird jersey.
My only complaint about Tampa is that there's rarely ever a clear day with a storm.
Yes.
You can't have a white jersey for that, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But the stupid rules.
Yeah, I know.
First retro.
That's fine.
Number three, San Jose. They just went all out, and they're like, we're going to do it. We're going to bring back the Seals colors, and it looks awesome.
I'm okay with that, yeah.
Number two, the Pittsburgh Penguins, bringing back the robot penguin. That's the first Penguins jersey I ever saw.
The Robo Pigeon.
And I remember that jersey. I remember that era. I love that it's back. And then number one, St. Louis. I think it's just St. Louis has an amazing history of jerseys, and bringing in like the pro, literally going to the vault and picking, okay, this is a jersey that we almost wore. Let's just use this template and bring it out here, and the history behind it. It looks cool. It's an interesting color, and I think it's going to look great on the ice.
So St. Louis makes all of our lists. I have Minnesota at number five. I love Minnesota's throwback to the North Stars. I know they took they did the white one a couple years ago, and then they're doing the sort of the road one this year. But I love that green. I love everything about that. St. Louis was number four for me. Again, I love that idea of the prototype as well. Sharks at number three because again, I love the Seals idea. The fact that they're using a team that used teal anyway, and then just incorporating it into their own, that's fantastic. Boston number two.
Yes.
Which I absolutely didn't think I'd like in white, and I saw it, and I was like, no, this works.
It was really hard to not put it in my top five, because it just worked. It's literally a reverse of a retro jersey, and it works.
And Los Angeles at number one, because again, like a reverse, in terms of what you just said, a reverse of a retro jersey, that crown on that white jersey looks fantastic.
Yeah. I honestly think that they should go back to that color scheme full time.
I kind of wish they would. I know that they're, but I mean, I was joking.
I hate the black and silver.
No, I understand what you're saying. That's the Gretzky era from the Hull Olympics in terms of where they took it from. But the idea that if you took away everybody's current jerseys and you replace them with the reverse retros, which team could stand on their own? I think Minnesota could easily. Mm-hmm. I think LA could easily. Yep. Beyond that, I don't know if there's very many other teams that could do that. And that's one of the reasons why they're in my top five. Again, they've done such a good job at hearkening back to an era that either they didn't have and they're bringing it forward, or they're going back to an era where they go, this is retro. This is as far back as we can go in our history to make us look like we once did.
Yeah, and they're not going back to their own, like, in that city, like that, I guess, quote-unquote franchise. They're going to the area and picking a jersey from that area, from that history, and showing it off.
I mean, that's the Jack Kent Cook era, and I mean, that's when the Great Western Forum and all that was still around, so no Staples Center there. Your bottom five?
5 to 1. Number five, Columbus. It is just such a boring, like, lazy idea. You have the history of that area. You've talked about the Columbus Chill while we were listening to the interview.
Yeah.
I brought up the Cincinnati Stingers of the WHA. There's the Cleveland Crusaders of the WHA. There's a lot that you can do with hockey history in Ohio, and you completely missed the mark by just going to a random old template, flipping the colors around, and slapping your current logo on it. I think it's just lazy. Speaking of lazy, number four is Nashville. Just
same rule,
taking their old third, swapping out the color. It was an ugly jersey then. It's an ugly jersey now. It hasn't gotten better with time. Number three, Carolina. Again, lazy. Just a recolor of your really ugly road jersey. Don't worry, people. That's going to be their home jersey in 2 to 3 years. Mark that in your calendars, because they're going to do it, because Columbus or Carolina changes their jersey order every year. Number two, Detroit. Because I take it as a personal offense that they're not doing a tribute to the Michigan Stags. Also, it's just, you also have the Falcons history there that you can pull from. Yeah. You have
Cougars history,
there's a lot that you can do. and they just did none of it. And then number one, Chicago. Again, you had the Chicago Cougars idea that you could take from. There's so much that you could do, but you just copied Detroit's homework and slapped your city name on an ugly jersey. Like,
yeah, it's brutal. I'm not going to veer very far from you. Ottawa is my number five in terms of worst. Mm-hmm. Again, you can't just take a color away and hope that it looks better. Vancouver, because I hate them dressing like their minor league team. Carolina, number three in terms of the third worst. Again, I hate the nicknames on the front of jerseys. Yep. You're not the Canes, you're the Hurricanes. Chicago, number two. Detroit, number one, only because I hate the black on that jersey. Yep. I understand they had one year where they had black in their color scheme. One year does not make it okay when you're representing mm-hmm. a different jersey that didn't have black on it. Yep. And I know that's the flip from the white stripes they had, but the striping doesn't even match that jersey. So it's not anything. It's legitimately just garbage.
What we talked about while we were listening to the interview, just take the red Michigan Stags, has the black and white there with the striping, throw the Red Wings logo on that, put the stag on the shoulder, done.
Quick notes as we go through this. Montreal would have got higher on my list if they had gone full Expos, not just halfway. They needed to go red lettering, red numbering on that jersey. I'm tired of the Colorado State flag. Why couldn't Colorado do the Quebec prototype jersey with the wolf from the Quebec mm-hmm. Nordiques?
Yep. I also brought up the Denver Spurs of the WHA.
Denver Spurs would have been a good one,
getting some orange in there.
And you had mentioned that Montreal, you wanted to see the Wanderers in there as well.
They have had three NHL teams in the city of Montreal. Pick one.
Dallas used their 1993 template. I would have liked to see them go to the yellow or the gold star prototype jersey they were planning on bringing out as an alternate, and they never did. I would have loved to have seen that brought out as their reverse retro this year. Mm-hmm. Islanders, I don't understand why you're killing fishermen by completely destroying all of the coloring in that. Yep. That was a fantastic, go all the way. If you're going to do it, go all the way, put the wave at the bottom, get the funky lettering again, have some fun with it. And honestly, what the hell is Florida doing?
I mean,
that's just a terrible design jersey.
I said it before, like it looks like a template that you take from the NHL, create a team, you know, function, and you slap the secondary logo on the front.
It's bad. That's all I can say. Sorry,
also,
Florida.
Carolina should have gone with the New England Whalers, the W with
that
the
harpoon. Would have been fantastic.
Calgary should have gone with the Calgary Cowboys.
Yes.
Minnesota should have gone with the Fighting Saints colors with that jersey.
Yeah.
That jersey template's fine.
Yeah.
Just bring in the blue, yellow, and white from the Fighting Saints.
Yeah.
Ottawa should have gone with the Ottawa Nationals.
That would have been
the
interesting.
The ON with the Maple Leaf. Seattle should have gone Metropolitans or Seattle Totems.
Absolutely.
It's easy.
Speaking of Seattle, we got 3 minutes to go here before we get out of here. 3 minutes to go. Speaking of Seattle, Alaska Airlines is a partner of there. Alaska Airlines announced yesterday that anyone wearing a Kraken jersey holding a valid ticket on one of their flights is going to get priority boarding on that flight now.
Yeah.
You don't even have to show up and register for anything else other than, hey, I'm wearing a jersey.
That's a really good promotion.
That's a pretty good idea. Coachella Valley jerseys also will work for that as well. So Alaska Airlines is going to allow their AHL team to get in there as well. But I think it's a fun way to promote your partnership. And before we get out of here, Jay, we got 2.5 minutes. So I want you to go through favorite Halloween candy before we go, because we got to get out of here.
Oh no! Does it have to be specific stuff that comes around Halloween?
Well, it can be anything. But I mean, if it's better if you can get it at Halloween.
The one that I always loved getting, the Jolly Rancher suckers, like lollipops.
Yeah,
I loved those.
Really?
Specifically the watermelon ones.
Nice.
Those are my favorite.
I was going through, I mean, I don't really care about candy that much or whatever, but I was shocked at all of the stuff that you can't get in the U.S. you can only get in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, again, Maynard Swedish Berries is only a Mr. Big, Smarties, Coffee Crisp. Caramilk isn't made in the U.S. They don't have that in the... They have variations of it, but Caramilk is strictly a Canadian thing.
You guys are missing out.
Crispy Crunch, the Crunchy Bar, Kinder Surprise not available in the U.S. Aero Bars are only made in Canada. Again, I was shocked at that. Hickory Sticks, only available in Canada. The Big Turk. Kit Kats are available in the U.S., but they're made by Hershey, not Nestle, and they have a different recipe.
Now I know why my friend who lives in Missouri always loads up on candy while she's here.
Mars bars aren't in the U.S. either. They have what's called the Milky Way. Completely different. You can't get Crush Cream Soda in the U.S. either.
What?
You cannot. Hawkins cheesies, we already know, aren't down there. Lay's ketchup chips, Ruffles all dressed chips aren't down there. Kraft peanut butter will never be available down there. It's a Canadian thing. Canada Dry ginger ale. The Wonder Bar, not available in the U.S. either. So there's a lot of stuff that can't get, that's not available in your, in your. I mean, again, I don't expect anybody to have Kraft peanut butter in there.
American Halloween must suck. Candy is amazing.
What can you do with all of that stuff, right? I mean, that's the fun stuff. Jay, anything you got to say before we get out of here? We got 30 seconds. Let's get this wrapped up well.
Happy birthday to my girlfriend Miranda. Her birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday!
Yeah. And if you want a film she worked on called The Routine is premiering tonight at the Cinematheque, and I think there's a couple more showings.
Check it out. Yep.
Yep.
So online, there's they're one of our partners actually. So check it out online for sure. Hit their website. Anything coming up this week on Let's Talk About? What's the topic this week? Any idea?
Be going through the abysmal voting turnout for the mayoral election here in Winnipeg and why it's important to vote.
All 31% of us that voted.
Yes, including me. I voted.
Congratulations to Scott Gillingham. He is our new mayor here in Winnipeg. So a big, big congratulations to him as he ended up winning the first time ever that a mayor has been elected with less than 30% of the vote. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive to see, to think that we didn't do a very good job voting at all. So
10% of the voting population of Winnipeg decided who the mayor was.
So if you're going to complain, folks, don't, because if you didn't vote, you have no right to complain. With that, though, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up right away, actually, here on 101.5 UMFM. I can spit that out. With that, folks, we'll see you next week here on Thursday. Have a good one, everybody. Talk to you then.
This is my costume? Come on, put in some effort. Guys, just because you showed up doesn't mean you get an apple.
Apple? We're here for candy!
There's a lot of sugar in an apple!
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg, wishing you a happy Halloween.